or rejection, or cruelty exchanged in a moment of weakness. Not to anything. A tear plopped onto the page as I stared down at it, giving up. It had taken so long to glue the shards of my heart back together, and I just couldn't afford to give any pieces away. Chapter 21. The next night, Tessa was the last one to arrive at Alcott's. We were cramming in one last hangout before her morning flight and Morgan's family road trip to see cousins in Virginia. Kaylee and I would both be spending spring break in scenic Oakhurst, where my only plan was to marathon Gilmore Girls in my bed. Yesterday's fight with Max consumed my mind, burning the edges of rational thought. I'd spent half my day bitterly waiting for him to call or show up, full of apologies, and the other half working up the nerve to apologize first. "Sorry," Tessa said, sliding into the booth. The sloppy bun on top of her head meant she'd been at yoga earlier. I had to at least start packing before my mom would let me leave. "Where are you going again?" "St. Bart's?" Kaylee asked. "Saint-Tropez." "What's the difference? One is in the south of France, and one of them is south of the Dominican Republic." "Potato, potato," Kaylee said. "You'll come back tan and we'll hate you."
"How was yesterday?" I cut in, my voice strained. None of them had called or texted about how things went at Whitewater Lodge. They mumbled over each other.
"Fine," and "oh, okay," and "pretty good."
"We couldn't help but notice," Morgan said slyly, "that Max was also absent. Would you happen to know anything about that?"
The tears sprang forward in an instant, like they'd just been waiting for the magic words. I covered my face with my hands, though it didn't matter. I couldn't hide this from them anymore.
"Oh my gosh," Morgan said. "I'm sorry.
Paige, what is it?" Kaylee asked, and I felt Tessa's arm around my shoulder. When I just shook my head from behind my hands, Tessa said, "See, Morgan, this is why I told you guys not to bring it up." At this, I uncovered my eyes.
"You told them what?"
Morgan bit her lip.
"Tessa put a Max gag order on us."
"Meaning?" I looked at Tessa, but it was Kaylee who answered. "We're not supposed to mention Max in any way that suggests the two of you are obsessed with each other."
Of course they knew. They probably knew before I knew, and I felt like a complete jackass.
Tessa looked right back at me, unrepentant. "I wanted you to be able to tell us when you were ready."
"So you all know?"
I glanced around at each of them.
"That you're in love with him?" Morgan asked. "Yes?"
"I'm not in love with him," I said. "God, of course we know," Kaylee snorted. Morgan smiled.
"And duh, he likes you back."
"He didn't," I stammered, directing the question at Tessa.
"He hasn't said
anything about it?" she asked. "No." "But to quote Morgan," Kaylee said, "duh."
"I'm really not so sure."
My voice cracked and the words poured out like a burst open dam. I told them all about the plan I made at the beginning of the year, which I'd never even fully told Tessa, and the drowning nightmare.
"I kind of figured," Morgan admitted gently. "You didn't get in the pool once last summer."
I almost smiled. "You mean you didn't believe me that I was working on my tan?" Kaylee laughed. "You wear SPF 100 even in the winter." I glanced over at Tessa, who was notably quiet.
Several times I'd woken up at her house in the middle of the night, tears on my face and gasping. You probably knew, huh? One of her shoulders lifted. I didn't know your nightmares were always about drowning, but I figured they had something to do with Aaron, yeah. They were equally unsurprised when I told them about screenwriting and my application to NYU. Girl, you're weirdly into TV, Kaylee said, but it's like you're not just watching it, you're dissecting it. And that's coming from me, obsessive number one fan of Toil and Trouble. Tessa turned to her. Is that your Witches at Boarding School show? With the hot warlock boys school across the pond, yes. Anyway, Morgan said, settling her eyes back on me. They cringed as I told them about the pool, about how I'd fallen in, terrified, how Max and I had fought. I covered my eyes with one hand again. I said something awful to him, you guys, and he said something really mean back. The three of them exchanged looks, silently deciding that Tessa would be the spokesperson. What could you have said that was so bad? You were traumatized, he had to understand that. I can't, I said. I can't repeat what I said. It's personal stuff, but it was bad. I'm sure you guys will sort it out, Tessa said. Even if you don't wind up together. Tessa! Morgan gasped as if that was a sacrilege. No, listen. Even if you don't wind up together, neither of you are the kind of people who would let this ruin a friendship. I guess that's true, I said meekly. I repeated Max's words in my head, wondering if I could ever forget them. But he said, basically, that I act like I'm the only one with problems. And I think he might be right. He did not mean that, Tessa said firmly. He knows exactly how often you deal with my problems because I talk to him about it. I mean, hello, Kaylee said. You snuck out of your house and stole a car for me. Excuse me, what? Morgan cried. I'll tell you later, Kaylee said. But I mean, look at me now, I said, blubbering all my problems to you again. Tessa jabbed my leg with her finger, prodding me to look over at her. Your problems are our problems? They better be, Kaylee said, because my problems are sure as heck your problems. You all are going to hear me whine about Eric for at least a few more weeks. I'm going to max out the friendship punch card.
No such thing, Morgan said.
Max out. I almost laughed. It felt like I'd maxed out my feelings punch card. But Morgan was right. If you're lucky, relationships with family or friends or boyfriends are limitless. There's no maximum on how much you can love each other. The problem is, there's also no limit to how much you can hurt each other. I glanced at my phone for any word from Max. But still, I came up empty. Kaylee and I spent the week together indulging in manicures and the TV marathon I'd been hoping for. She confiscated my phone on two different occasions, claiming I was quote-unquote compulsively checking for any word from Max. But the phone was back in my possession on Saturday morning, with only 2 days left of break. I was picking up my room, blaring MASH on DVD to keep my mind quiet. Still keeping a hawk's eye on my phone, I noticed right away when it lit up with a local number. I pitched a sweater into my hamper and muted the TV. Hello? Hi, is this Paige? A guy's voice asked. Yeah? It's Clark Driscoll. He hesitated. You gave me your number after the funeral. I wasn't sure if...
Yeah, I remember.
I sat down on my bed and tried to sound as if this call wasn't bafflingly unexpected. What if he needed to talk? Like, about feelings? Hey, Clark. I know this is out of the blue, but some of the guys in me... He paused and I locked my mouth closed so I wouldn't say some of the guys and I. We're, going to play trampoline dodgeball this afternoon, in honor of his birthday, I finished, remembering in an instant. Aaron would have been 17. I co-hosted a party for Max's 17th birthday, and yet I forgot Aaron's. It's not like we'd ever celebrated it together, but I pressed my face into my hand all the same. Yeah, Clark said. Anyway, that probably sounds dumb to you. It's just that, you know, Aaron went there every birthday. We, wanted to invite you.
Really?
I'd figured Aaron's longtime friends thought of me as an outsider, someone who didn't have any right to be devastated.
No pressure, he said quickly. I just tried to think about what Aaron would want, and I know he would have wanted me to call you.
It wasn't quite the same as I'd like for you to come, but it was close enough. I'd love to. He told me the details, offered to pick me up, and after the conversation was over, I stared at my phone. Clark Driscoll reaching out to me, including me in a group of people who cared about Aaron so much, became just another thing I never would have guessed at the start of the year. Clark and I were quiet until we hit the first stoplight. The lack of both sound and movement was too grating, and I had to speak. So, did you do this last year? He shook his head, not meeting my eyes.
I couldn't. You know how it is.
Yeah, I guess I do, I said. I'd experienced only a fraction of his loss, but I did know that feeling. Our strange camaraderie made me bolder. Man, the first time I went back to Snyder's diner, I kept expecting him to walk in. But being there, I remembered details that I couldn't before. I remembered exactly what we both ordered on that first date. I know it's weird, but the taste of the French fries, it's like I could close my eyes and see him so clearly in my mind. He nodded, jaw stiff, as he steered us onto the highway.
Thanks.
I brushed my bangs to the side. For what?
For telling me that. Hearing people talk about him makes me feel like I'm not the only one who remembers or something.
I wanted to reach over to him, to put my hand on his arm. But we barely knew each other, so I took a different angle. Well then, you have to hear this one. I told him with as much animation as I could about Aaron's epic showdown with the claw machine cat. Clark laughed along, especially at the part where Aaron announced to everyone that he'd gotten it on his first try. He ran his hands over the steering wheel.
That sounds just like him.
At the trampoline center, called Fly High, I met, or re-met, a few of Aaron's other friends. There were a couple guys from school and a few from his Boy Scout troop, whom I could barely look in the eyes, afraid they'd sense all the questions I'd never be cruel enough to ask.
Everyone, this is Paige, Clark said. Paige, everyone.
This wasn't the beginning of a new friend group, and we all knew it. But I was grateful to be allowed in the treehouse, even if our togetherness came only from a shared absence. We stashed our shoes and cell phones in lockers and listened as a Fly High employee explained the many rules. I stared into the arena, which had dozens of black trampolines built into the floor, complete with side trampolines built to lean against the walls. On my little rectangle of trampoline, I pressed down, barely bending my knees, a hesitant bounce to feel it out. The trampoline gave way and pushed back up under my feet. I steadied myself, arms out. I jumped down this time and I sprang right back up. As my hair lifted from my shoulders, I grinned like an idiot, already eager to be weightless again. I leaped from one launch pad to another, hardly noticing how out of breath I was. The guys bounced all around me, whipping dodgeballs at each other, without a single one sent in my direction. I wondered if Morgan would call it sexism or chivalry, but I wanted to participate fully, the way I would have if Aaron were here. I scooped up a nearby ball, and focusing all my meager hand-eye coordination, I sprang down on the trampoline. Mid-air, I launched the ball, pegging Clark right in the stomach. He made an oof sound, looking to see where the hit had come from. I waved to him, still grinning. This made me fair play, even if the throws seemed to be gentler in my direction. We bounced until my forehead sweated beneath my bangs, but I still didn't want to stop. I took a running start toward Clark, who leaped away from me as I retracted my arm. My ball missed him, but his swerve cost him his balance. "Oh, shit," he said as he stumbled, but an angled wall trampoline caught his fall. He bounced off it on his side and landed on another trampoline, shaking with laughter. I bounded toward him, dropping down. "Are you," I said through gasps of laughter, "okay?" He was laughing so hard that there were tears in his eyes. He bonked me lightly on the head with the ball in his hand. "Yeah, totally." I sat there, legs folded beneath me, as Clark's shoulders slowed from the laughter. Rosiness pooled in his cheeks the way it used to before he thinned out. "He'd be happy," I said, "knowing we were doing this."
"Yeah, he would be." "Hey!"
an authoritative voice yelled from the platform.
"You two, no sitting."
Clark scrambled up and offered me his hand.
"I think we have to keep jumping."
"Yeah," I said, letting him pull me up. "I think we do." Later that night, I re-examined my plan, now tear-stained in two different places. My progress was no different than it had been at the beginning of the year. 1, parties / social events, crossed off. 2, new group, crossed off. 3, date, parentheses, RC crossed off. 4, travel. 5, swim. But so much more had happened. Things that didn't exactly fit on the list. So I wrote everything out, just to see it all together. Kissed Ryan Chase. Parentheses, kind of. Came to terms with my parents dating. Parentheses, kind of. Applied for screenwriting program. Sneaked out of my house for Kaylee. Planned a party. Tried new ice creams and TV shows and movies. Made new friends. Played trampoline dodgeball. The smaller steps mattered, and I could finally feel the distance they'd put between me and the past. I never could have had a day like this last year. I never could have let my heart feel as buoyant as my body mid-air. Sadness still fell. The soft pitter-patter of spring rain. But each small joy opened like an umbrella right above me. And so, as I closed my planner, I opened my heart another inch. Chapter 22. Sunday night, I barely slept knowing I'd see Max at school. I clicked his name on my phone, the only light in my dark room, at midnight, at 1 a.m. What would I even say? Since that first day at his house in the fall, Max and I had never gone this long without talking. I awoke with shadows beneath my eyes, and my first three classes couldn't hold my attention at all. As I took my seat in honors English, my palms went clammy, and I told myself it would be fine. I heard him sit down as the bell rang, and I glanced over my shoulder. He was staring down at his desk. "Hey," I said.
"Hey."
His eyes didn't move. That was it. I couldn't process a word Ms. Pepper said throughout class. When the dismissal bell rang, I turned around again. Max was already ducking out the door. My mouth opened to call out his name, but for what? To talk it out in front of everybody? "Do you want me to talk to him?" Morgan asked as we walked out together. "I will." "No," I said. "I need to do it. I just need to figure out what I want to say." On Tuesday, I caught Max at his locker before school started. I strode over confidently, even though my lower lip quivered, giving me away. "Hey," I said. His eyes flicked to me.
"Hey.
Listen, are we okay? It was so messed up what happened, but..."
"I'm fine," he said. "I'm just really busy. I have robotic stuff and everything, sorry."
"Oh, okay." The locker door shut with a clang, and he said,
"See ya."
I was left standing there, gaping. Morgan appeared at my side within seconds, her gossip radar flashing red. "Hey," she said. "What was that?" "That," I said, "was Max blowing me off." "The pool thing still?" "Yeah." Heat pushed at my eyes, but I blinked it away. "He has no business being mad at you," Morgan said. "He does, though, Morgan. We both screwed up. Will you see him any other time, outside of school, where it might be easier to talk? Quiz bowl, maybe?" I shook my head. "Not until the quiz bowl semifinals, and that's 2 weeks away." "It'll be fine," Morgan said. "He just needs to cool off. I'm sure you guys will make up by then." We didn't. In the 8 school days that followed, Max disappeared with the finesse of an actual ghost. He sneaked in as class started, bailed out right as it ended. His avoidance confused me the first week, but pissed me off the second. I had a right to be mad too, but I wasn't dodging him. Still, I couldn't work up the nerve to corner him again or stop by his house. I replayed the situation over and over in my mind, trying to figure out how I'd hurt him more than he hurt me. I told myself I was giving him some space to collect himself, but really, I was just terrified that I'd get weepy and confess my real feelings at the exact wrong moment. In the evenings, I started a new spec script on my laptop. I wrote mainly fight scenes. Characters passionately yelling about how they really felt. At least Max's freeze-out was good for my dialogue. I refreshed my inbox, hoping to see NYU pop up. Radio silence from them, too. As I got ready for the quiz bowl semifinals, I felt sweaty just thinking about sitting next to Max, facing an audience of parents and other teams. The tension between us shrilled like a dog whistle. Not everyone could hear it, but for those of us who could, it was grating and impossible to ignore. I feared once we sat down, the auditorium windows would crack from our awkwardness.
"Can you put the flashcards down, please?"
Kaylee asked, wrapping the curling iron around a lock of my hair.
You keep moving your head, and I'm almost done. You already look much cuter than Lindsay Lohan when she went to the Mathlete finals in Mean Girls. Ha ha, I said, but I set the flashcards down. Kaylee's dark eyes examined the newest curl, giving it the lightest mist of hairspray. So, what are you guys doing tonight?
I thought we told you, Kaylee said. Tessa's parents got us tickets for some art gallery thing. I don't know, sounds kind of boring, but Morgan's excited.
Cool, I said. I knew that already, and I also knew how bored they'd be at the semifinals. It was a bit of a drive to Anderson, Indiana, and they'd have to sit through two other matches before our team went on stage, but I wished they were coming anyway.
There. Cutest nerd I ever saw, Kaylee proclaimed, and I had to smile. I'd borrowed lilac nail polish from Morgan and a blazer from Tessa, which I wore over a cute dress. All in all, I hoped I looked put together and academic, but not too serious. Only my dress and flats were my own, but I felt like myself. And I felt like I was taking all three of my best friends with me. Kaylee wished me luck and called goodbye to my parents as she left.
You look nice, honey. You ready to go? My mom asked, reaching for her purse. I nodded, holding my flashcards so tightly that the paper edges pressed lines into my hands. My dad practically danced his way to the driver's seat.
This is so cool. Can't wait to see you up there, kiddo.
My nerves quivered, like tiny live wires right below my skin. The semifinals were different from regular matches in a few ways. Parents attended. The location was at a neutral away school with a neutral moderator, and we would actually be seated at a table on the stage, with lights beating down on us. Also, there were two other matches tonight between different schools. We were third, so I'd have to sit through other wins and defeats, imagining which ours would work out to be. I chugged my entire bottle of water and asked my dad to blast the air conditioning. Neither helped. Normally, knowing I'd see Max there would have calmed me a little, but it only made me more nervous. When I'd texted him to say I wouldn't need a ride, he'd replied with an empty,
"Okay."
I didn't know what I'd expected him to say, but tears itched at my eyes. I'm a basket case, I thought. Who gets emotional over two letters? But then I remembered that no also has only two letters. Almost everyone in the world has cried over those. It was clear from the first 5 minutes on stage. We were going to lose. My brain couldn't even fully process the questions before Noblesville answered them correctly.
Instituted by the Clinton administration in 1994, this policy...
Noblesville buzzed. Don't ask, don't tell. Correct. Their speed, compared to our open-mouthed lagging, was absurd. At one point, Malcolm actually started laughing to himself, taking Max and I right with him.
Lauren's cheeks flushed pink with frustration. My parents were in the audience, so I should have been mortified, but there was nothing to do but laugh. The inevitability of defeat was oddly freeing. There was nothing to lose, only to gain, and each question we answered became cause for celebration. Everyone else got a few in, including me. I was shell-shocked during the first round, but I recovered in the second. I buzzed before the moderator had finished his sentence.
A one-time employee of Thomas Edison, page for Oakhurst, the moderator said,
acknowledging me by my name card. I knew in my gut that I was right. I'd once read a book that fictionalized a friendship between a young maid and
Nikola Tesla.
Correct,
the moderator said.
Yeah,
my dad called from the audience, leaping to his feet.
That's my girl.
My mom tugged him down and the other parents laughed. I wasn't even embarrassed. A few minutes into our cataclysmic loss, a small crowd filed into the back of the auditorium. They were trying to be quiet, but the chairs squeaked as they sat down. Maybe 4 or 5 people. My people. Tessa, Morgan, Kaylee, and Ryan. I was sure of it by their heights and the silhouettes of their hair. If I'd had any doubt, it would have been alleviated when Noblesville flubbed with Krakatau, and Max responded correctly with Mount Tambora. There was a chorus of girlish whoops from the last row of the auditorium, and Ryan Chase's broiest voice calling, "Yeah, son!" I dared a look at Max. He shook his head, smiling. The Noblesville captain scowled at us. They were winning, but we were having more fun. And when Noblesville was announced the winner, I had a feeling that most of the cheers were from the losing side supporters. Malcolm offered me his hand as I stepped down from the stage. Max trotted down to talk to his mom, who waved to me. I waved back, cringing against the ache in my sternum. I pushed away thoughts of her watching the end of Indiana Jones with us, of her making snacks for me and Morgan as we studied for an English test with Max. Of her always, always hugging me when I left. I looked away. Max had been sitting right next to me for the past hour, but he'd never been so distant.
"Well, we may have lost tonight, but overall this is farther than we got last year," Lauren announced. "I'm pleased."
"We're going to miss you next year," I said. She was off to Johns Hopkins, where she'd be splitting her time between the conservatory and an applied mathematics major. She blinked at me. "I'm very much looking forward to an academically rigorous college curriculum, so I probably won't miss this." "Yeah," I said, laughing. "I know. But I had fun this year." I leaned forward to give her a quick hug. To my surprise, she squeezed me back.
"Me too."
The moment Lauren walked away, hands wrapped around me from behind, my dad nearly lifting me off the ground.
"I'm so proud of you, kid."
I grinned. "I wish you could have seen us win."
"It was fun to see you up there,"
my mom said, squeezing my hand. I didn't have a chance to respond before Tessa, Morgan, and Kaylee surrounded me, all talking at once. They smelled like hairspray and perfume, and I could have burst from love for them. "What happened to the art gallery thing?"
"We made that up," Morgan said. "Duh."
"You lied?"
"Not exactly," Kaylee said. "It was just a secret." "Sorry we were a little late. We got lost," Tessa added.
"Because somebody had to make an emergency pit stop," Kaylee said.
"Hey, I needed that milkshake," Tessa said.
She turned to my mom. "Can Paige spend the night?" My mom smiled at this age-old question.
"Sure."
"I can still drive home with you guys," I said.
"Nah," my dad said, winking. "Go with your friends."
I did. As we left the auditorium, Max looked up from a conversation with his mom, Ryan, and Ms. Pepper. He put his hand up in a wave, eyes trained away from me. Tessa waved back, and so did Kaylee, but Morgan just looped her arm through mine. Ryan held up one finger, then pointed toward the exit.
"He drove," Tessa said. "I guess he'll meet us out there in a few."
"Is Max freaking kidding me with the moping?" Morgan demanded as we bustled out into the spring air. "He is being such a baby." "So you guys had a fight, big deal."
"Seriously," Kaylee said. "Morgan and I fight all the time, you get over it."
Tessa gnawed at her lip, gaze fixed on the asphalt in front of us. "I know," I said quietly. "I don't get it either."
"Has he said anything to you?" Morgan asked, looking at Tessa.
She shook her head. "No.
He's just been kind of quiet, I guess. I asked him if he was okay at lunch, and he just said he was in a funk. But I could talk to him if...
No, I said. I don't want to put you in the middle. He's your friend, too.
Funk that, Kaylee said.
We'd reached Ryan's Jeep, and we leaned against the bumper.
We need more information. Has he said anything to you, Paige?
Not really. I get zero eye contact and one-word text messages. It's brutal.
Morgan held out her hand, palm up.
Give me your phone. We need to do text analysis.
Definitely, Kaylee added. Dig for textual innuendo.
Be my guest, I said, pulling my phone out of my bag. You'll see for yourselves that he's giving me nothing. I punched in my phone's password, but as I went to click into messages, I saw that my email icon had changed since I'd last checked.
Hold on, I said.
From NYU. Subject line, congratulations. My heart's rhythm became less of a beat and more a repeated collision with my ribcage. I opened the email.
Oh my God, I whispered.
What? Tessa stepped closer. The screenwriting program. I'm in.
Oh my God, Tessa said, echoing me.
That is the best news, Morgan said,
and Kaylee woohooed into the quiet parking lot. I kept staring at the email.
It was real. They'd read my Mission District spec script. I'd moved to Manhattan for an entire month, assuming my parents really would let me go. I mean, it's still not for sure, I said. My parents said they'd pay for it, but who knows if...
Hey, Tessa said, cease and desist order on the negativity.
It's not negativity, I'm being realistic.
And realistically, Kaylee said, we are super excited for you.
I smiled tentatively. Thanks.
Are you excited for you?
Kaylee prodded. Well, obviously, I'm excited. I think she's in shock, Morgan said, tilting her head to study me. Kaylee got to her feet, standing in front of me.
Come on, get up. We gotta dance it out.
She pumped her arms, rocking back and forth.
Victory dance. Do it.
Morgan joined in with the same goofy dance.
Yep, come on.
I shook my head, laughing, as a voice called out near us.
What did I miss?
Ryan jogged toward us.
Paige got into a summer writing program, Morgan said.
Nice, he said,
holding up his hand. I high-fived him, grinning.
But it seems you're missing something. Be right back.
He ducked into the Jeep, and music blasted out of the now open windows.
There we go,
Kaylee said, right back to dancing. Morgan bumped me with her hip, and I laughed as even Tessa raised her hands up, totally into it. The beat of the song pulsed through the evening air, and Ryan Chase stood before me. I could hardly believe I'd been so overcome by a crush on him. I actually knew him now, and he was just as great as I'd always thought. But his traits were academic facts to me now. Ryan Chase was handsome, charming, and kind. I didn't feel those things in my chest, sizzling like neon light. He cocked his chin.
Aren't you gonna dance?
Yeah. I stood a little taller, feeling the swell of happiness through me. I am.
Yeah, you are.
Without warning, Ryan scooped me up, my feet leaving the ground. I gasped, hands clutching for something, anything, until I regained equilibrium from higher up. Once I realized I was secure, I laughed, and he spun around. I didn't even have time to be self-conscious that he was holding me by my bare legs, his arms wrapped around my thighs. I held my arms out wide and tilted my head up to the night sky. I felt like I could lift right out of his arms, spinning to the ground like a maple seed. Ryan slid me down and we pulled apart as the song hit the fast-paced chorus, and there was really nothing to lose. So I put my hands up, I swayed my hips, I shook my shoulders. I was dancing, really dancing, for the first time in almost 2 years. Morgan's laughter pealed through the air as the three of them performed some kind of do-si-do. Tessa's blonde waves shimmying with every swing. I could make out their grins in the yellow streetlights. My crazy dancing friends. Mine. And I didn't feel like I'd lost a thing that night. Not a single thing. Chapter 23. I knew Max would dart out of English the second the bell rang on Monday, but the reality that I'd be gone for almost half the summer gave me courage. I had to fix this soon. I psyched myself up all morning, mentally scripting a conversation. Nothing could be worse than the tense silence, I told myself. Even talking it out had to be easier. So when the first tone of the bell sounded, I swiveled around to take my chance. I gripped Max's arm even though he was already sliding out of his seat. "Will you stay for a minute, please?" Everyone was filing out of the classroom. Morgan shot me a wide-eyed look as she passed through the door.
"I have class," Max said, not meeting my eyes.
"I know that," I said. "Please?" He didn't respond, but he didn't leave either. We stayed this way in silence, and I fought the desire to cringe.
"I have to go make some copies. See you two tomorrow,"
Ms. Pepper said, heading out the door. She wasn't carrying any papers to copy. "So," I said. I moved my hand from Max's arm. The room was too quiet, the faint hum of air conditioning and the wall-mounted clock. "I'm truly sorry for what I said at the pool. I shouldn't have brought those things up, no matter how
traumatized you were." He rubbed at his forehead with both hands. "Paige, I triggered some kind of PTSD for you, then acted like an asshole after everything you've been through. You can be mad at me. I'm mad at me."
"Well, you sort of had a point," I said. "And I did too. So can we just not be mad at each other anymore?"
"I'm not mad at you, Paige. I'm just
hurt," I guessed, and the next words came out in a frustrated jumble. "Me too, Max. But you're not the only non-confrontational introvert here, and I'm trying. So can you just look at me?" Finally, his eyes pulled up to mine.
"I'm sorry about what I said."
"I know." I balled my hands into fists, pressing my fingers into swampy hands. The worst was over. It had to be. And my next question would be the turning point. "So, can we just be okay now?" He chewed at his thumbnail, and I wondered what exactly he needed to consider so torturously. I was giving him a clean slate, and all I wanted was the same in return.
"I think I just need some time and space."
I collapsed inside myself, smaller and smaller, until I wished I could disappear from my seat. What did that even mean? We were equal offenders in that ridiculous poolside fight, and if anything, I had more cause to push him away. Now I come to him, palms up in surrender, and he backs away farther? "Fine," I said, picking up my things. "Well, just so you know, I got into my screenwriting program."
"That's great," he said. "I got into my Italy program, too."
The whole summer whooshed away right there. First I'd be gone, then him. "Well," I managed, even though my lungs shrank inside my chest. "There's your time and space. Maybe you should transfer back to Coventry while you're at it.
I've thought about it, he said quietly.
I recoiled, jaw dropping. My pulse quickened, pushing the mortification and confusion and anger through my veins.
Great, I said, standing in a huff. Just great. See you around.
Wait, he said. My hair flew around me as I spun back, still pathetically hopeful.
At the beginning of the year, why did you even become friends with me?
My eyes went squinty with confusion. I mean, we had quiz bowl together. We sat next to each other in this class. I don't know.
That's the reason, then? Circumstance?
Yeah. Why? Okay, technically I'd thought that being friends with Max would be my ticket to Ryan Chase, but that was before I knew Max. It stopped being about that a long time ago, and it's not like he could have known that.
No reason.
His head still sagged, defeated in a way I couldn't understand.
I really am sorry.
Yeah, I said. Me too. And I was. Sorry that we burned each other, sorry that he'd pulled up a drawbridge, shutting me out so completely. But not sorry that I'd tried to talk it out. Not sorry that I'd tried to fight for our friendship, even when I felt awkward and confused. I darted down the hallway in the opposite direction of our usual path, just to spite him. Still, I waited to hear my name called out over the hallway bustle. It never came. I went over to my grandmother's after school, even though I'd seen her on Sunday, to tell her about my New York news. Of course, she'd forgotten that I applied in the first place, so it was a huge surprise. She cried happy tears, kissed the top of my head, and kept saying, "My little Madeline Pugh." If there ever came a day that she couldn't remember that part of our history, I'd remember it for her. I'd remember it all for us both. After such a good day Sunday, I felt terrible dragging my misery to her on Monday. But I didn't know what else to do. I sat down in the chair next to her bed, my new usual spot. "What's on your mind, sweet girl?" she asked. Her voice had become quiet in recent weeks, with a soft rasp to it. I leaned over so that my head was on the bed. I felt my shoulders twitch, trying to absorb the restrained sobs from my stomach. I didn't want to cry, but my body insisted. "Honey," she said, running her hand over my hair. "Oh, honey." My tears slipped onto the quilt and I let them. I didn't wipe my eyes or cover my face. After a few minutes, the tears made space for words to fill. I explained as best I could, without confusing her, but it came out in rambles and sniffs. "Everything is so messed up," I choked out. "I was doing so much better about Aaron, but then I met Max, and it just got so real, so fast. I lost someone again, in a completely different way, but it still hurts, and I just feel so stupid." She brushed my bangs out of my eyes. "I know it's difficult to bear your heart, sweet girl, but it's the least stupid thing in the world." I sighed, wiping my face. I really was trying to move on, but I don't know why I bothered. When she was quiet for a moment, I looked up. Her bleary eyes became fierce. "Paige Elizabeth, you are allowed to be sad, but you are not allowed to be a defeatist. The fact that you are hurting means that you let someone truly matter to you, and that is exactly, exactly what your friend Aaron would have wanted for you." I paused, blinking, and more tears leaked out. "Yeah?
Of course. You've had your cry, but now you'll pick yourself up and keep living your life. Doubly for that sweet boy. Love extra. Even if it means you hurt extra too. That's how we honor them. But everything else with...
I began, but she raised her hand to stop me.
Everything else will fall into place, she said. Just live your life.
But I tried again.
No buts.
It was there, in her insistence, that she reminded me of my mom. Live my life, I repeated. And the mantra stuck in my mind, even after I left my grandmother's bedside.
Chapter 24. In other circumstances, I probably would have worked up the nerve to talk to Max again the next day. Instead, the words I might have said were gone, replaced by my grandmother's,
"Everything else will fall into place. Just live your life."
I'm not sure if those words would have mattered to me as much if they hadn't been some of the last words she ever said to me. My grandmother died that night, after another stroke that came out of nowhere. I had been there just a few hours before. After getting the call, we slid into that blur of sobbing and numbness.
"Mom, no,"
I kept repeating as I cried. "I'm so sorry, baby," she said, and tears dripped off her chin. She held Cameron and me against her on the couch, and we sobbed in a little pile until my dad got there. Cameron climbed onto his lap like a little kid, and he clutched my mother's hand between us. Eventually, we broke it up to deal with the notifications. It took the last of my energy to call Tessa and tell her. She sniffled into her end of the phone line, one of the few times I'd ever known her to cry. When she asked if I wanted her to come over, I told her I was too tired, too sad, too much of everything. When I slumped upstairs, I could hear, faintly, my mother's voice from her room, calling relatives and making arrangements. Her bedroom door was closed for the first time I could remember. The open door meant she was always available to us, if we got sick in the middle of the night, or rushed in after a terrible dream. But no matter how much it felt like a nightmare, this night was not a bad dream. And even if it had been, the door was closed. I was used to her being a mother to her daughters. Now she grieved in private. A daughter with no mother. I begged my mind to turn off as I climbed into bed. At the beginning of the school year, I thought nothing could be worse than returning to that look at school. But I would have given anything to go back there, when my grandmother was around, before I messed up everything with Max. I cried all over again, muffling the sounds against the pillow, until at the edge of sleep, a creaking sound pierced into my consciousness. I sat up, blinking. There was a small figure in my doorway, its arms crossed in the darkness.
"Cam,"
I mumbled. I blinked again. It was definitely my sister.
"What are you doing?"
"Can I sleep in here?"
she whispered.
"Yeah,"
I told her.
"Sure."
I adjusted myself, leaving plenty of room on the side where Tessa slept when she stayed over. Cameron hurried toward my bed as though she thought I might change my mind. Climbing under the covers, she clutched the stuffed rabbit she'd had since infancy.
"Are you okay?"
I whispered.
"I don't know."
Her voice cracked in the darkness. I laid my head on my pillow facing her.
"Me either."
Maybe as the older sister I should have lied and said something more comforting, but she deserved to hear the truth, to be commiserated with.
"I miss her so much already,"
Cameron said. I bit my lower lip, fighting against the lump in my throat.
"Me too. Do you think Mom will be okay?"
"Yeah,
I thought of the pain after Aaron died blistering beneath my skin. It will not always feel this way, Tessa had insisted.
Just not right away.
Cameron was quiet for a moment.
I don't ever want anything to happen to Mom.
It won't.
It might,
she said, calling my bluff. It won't. I needed to believe that too. Good night, Cam.
Good night.
When I awoke the next morning, Cameron was already up. I wondered if I had dreamed the whole thing, but there was an indentation on the pillow next to mine, where her head had been. The morning light felt harsh, too real. My grandmother was really gone, and even a night's sleep didn't dream it away. I curled myself into the fetal position for another little cry. When I eventually heard footsteps on the stairs, I expected my dad, but it was Tessa, holding two to-go cups from Alcott's. My eyes felt swollen as I propped myself up to greet her. She sat down on my bed where Cameron had been and handed me a coffee. I am so sorry, she whispered, her voice breaking. From Tessa, it was never that look, especially not now. She loved my grandmother too, and her sadness was her own. I bobbed my head and bit down on both of my lips. I had a feeling that I would be doing that move a lot for the next week. The coffee tasted hot, but not too hot. Bitter and comforting. We sat here for a moment. I felt my forehead creasing, my body instinctively knowing that I was going to cry again. I didn't get to say goodbye. She knew. Tessa turned to me. She knew how much you loved her. I nodded through my tears. It will get easier. Tessa promised all over again, linking her arm with mine and settling back against the headboard. I believed it this time, even as I stared down the long road ahead of me. It certainly didn't get better as the days dragged on. The funeral service was solemn, with all the expected formalities. My dad handed my mom tissues, his hand never leaving hers. Tessa sat in the pew exactly behind me, with Kaylee and Morgan on either side of her. When the pastor launched into a diatribe about the finality of death, I felt their hands on my shoulders, assuring me that they were behind me, that they were always behind me. I hated everything about the service. I hated the depressing music, hated how much I missed my grandmother, and hated the heartache radiating from my mother. I hated how much it reminded me of losing Aaron. I hated the graveside service, and I knew I would hate the repast at our house. I had no interest in appetizers or the people milling around giving us that look. 2 hours into the repast, I was long past exhaustion, emotional and physical. I was tired of saying thank you to all the I'm so sorry speeches, tired of wearing my brave face. So when there was a knock at our front door, I escaped to answer it. The police could have been on the other side for all I cared, as long as I could leave the groups of people pooling in the living room, the family room, and even into the edges of the kitchen. Hi, I breathed, pulling the door open. It was Ryan and Max, standing side by side, each with an armful of various containers. I recovered from my stunned silence and opened the door wider. Come in, I stammered. They filed into the house and made their way to the kitchen. I watched them go, suddenly very aware of my appearance. I smoothed my hair down and wiped beneath my eyes for stray mascara. Shallow, I accused myself. But I still straightened out my dress as I walked toward the kitchen. They set everything down on the counter. I opened my mouth to say something, but what? I wasn't sure. Now that they weren't holding a mound of stuff, I noticed they both had ties on. Something about that made me want to cry again, but before I could, I was engulfed in Ryan's chest, his arms wrapped around me.
I'm really, really sorry, Paige, he said quietly.
His chin rested on the top of my head and held me there, a real hug. Max gave